The richest man in the world right now, according to Forbes' list, is a fella from Mexico. His name is Carlos Slim Helu, and he is a billionaire. His net worth is estimated to be somewhere in excess of $74 billion. He made his money in the telecommunications industry. The two richest Americans are Bill Gates and Warren Buffett. We've heard their names many times, and I'm just happy that the two richest Americans right now are men who are very much into charity. And they have sort of challenged each other, and they're planning to give away the bulk of their estate. That's their current plan. They're already doing that, giving away millions of dollars every year. I wish more people would follow their example. Forbes measures individuals by what they are worth in dollars. I hope they don't bring their measuring stick around here, don't you? There's an old Scottish proverb, well, let me tell you why this is important. This measuring people by their net worth has become increasingly important, apparently, to women in our society who are looking for men to marry. In one recent survey, it said that the size of a man's bank account is the single most important factor in determining who they want to marry. Wow, that's surprising. Now, this old Scottish proverb that would argue against that says this: never marry for money. You can borrow it cheaper. Well, here in Ecclesiastes chapter 5, Solomon talks about money, and he had a reputation that had spread far and wide. He was celebrated for his riches and for his wisdom. And in Scripture, we read the story about a famous queen. Remember her? The Queen of Sheba, who had heard about Solomon and who was curious to find out if everything she had heard was really true. So she traveled and spent time there in Jerusalem. And she was part of the palace entourage, and she ate at Solomon's table, and she listened to him dispense wisdom and talked with him herself at length. And she stayed on there, and finally we're told her assessment. It's recorded in 1 Kings chapter 10, and this is what it says from the Amplified Version. It says, "When the Queen of Sheba had seen all Solomon's wisdom and skill, and the house he had built, and the food on his table, and the seating of his officials, and the standing at attention of his servants, their apparel, and his cupbearers, and his ascent by which he went up to the house of the Lord, she was breathless and overcome. She said to the king, 'It was a true report I heard in my own land of your acts and sayings and wisdom. I did not believe it until I came and my eyes had seen. Behold, the half was not told me. You have added wisdom and goodness exceeding the fame I heard. Happy are your men. Happy are these servants who stand continually before you, hearing your wisdom.'" She was overwhelmed with what she saw. And it's no wonder, because the text goes on there in 1 Kings 10, and it describes in great detail the revenues of Solomon and the tributes that came into him from all the nations and how much gold that he had. It says the weight of the gold that Solomon received yearly was 666 talents. Now, I got my calculator out, and a talent's about 7.5 pounds, and you multiply that by troy ounces, and then multiply that by about $1,487 in today's gold price, and that yields a little over $100 million annually in revenue just in the form of gold that came into Solomon during his reign. It says that he had 200 large shields made of hammered gold, and he made a great throne inlaid with ivory and overlaid with fine gold. And it says, all Solomon's goblets were gold, and all the household articles in the palace of the forest of Lebanon were pure gold. He had so much gold coming in, he just made everything out of gold in the whole palace. Can you imagine gold can openers and egg beaters? And I mean, everything was made out of gold. He had chariots, and he had horses, and he even had a personal zoo. It mentions baboons and all kinds of animals that were brought in to populate his personal zoo. Now, when a man who is that rich offers to tell you what it's really like to be in that position, we need to listen. We need to carefully listen to what he has to say. And listen to what he does say here. And we're going to look in chapter 5, beginning in verse 8, to Solomon's words about riches. There are several truths that he offers. And the first one is this, in chapter 5, verse 8, he says, if you see the poor oppressed in a district and justice and rights denied, do not be surprised at such things. For one official is eyed by a higher one, and over them both are others higher still. The increase from the land is taken by all. The king himself profits from the fields. Now, he just simply says this, wherever there is great wealth, you are likely to find oppression and injustice. You know, that happens. There are layers of opportunity and wealth in places like that he's describing here. And we see around our world today, nation after nation after nation, as an example. I mean, there's corruption right here in our country. But there are countries where oppression is just astounding, where wealthy rulers live in opulence and riches while their people starve. Just remember back a few years ago to the way Idi Amin ruled in Uganda. Remember how Baby Doc ruled down in Haiti while the people lived in such grinding poverty. How Noriega ruled and lived in opulence in Nicaragua. How Saddam Hussein built palace after palace while his people were impoverished. And how Mugabe, even today, lives in palatial splendor while the people in Zimbabwe live in tiny huts. Solomon just says, do not be surprised when you see great wealth in the hands of the leaders. Don't be surprised to see the poor oppressed and justice and rights denied. Well, that's one aspect of wealth. And that's an aspect that I think we would all universally say that that's a bad thing when wealth sometimes is concentrated in the wrong hands. But he goes on and he talks about another truth. And the second truth is simply this: if you love money, you will never be satisfied. Now, these are things that we hear and we know, and I think sometimes we don't always believe. But Solomon says, take it from me. If you love money, you'll never be satisfied. Verse 10. Whoever loves money never has money enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with his income. This, too, is meaningless. What a way to spend your life, loving and chasing that which will never satisfy. Now, note what he says. He says loves. This is not a biblical attack against someone who possesses wealth. This is an attack against anyone, rich or poor, who loves wealth and wants to acquire wealth. Paul echoed the very same teaching in the New Testament when he said, the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. You know, isn't it amazing that money can buy us tons of comforts and privileges, but not 1 ounce of contentment? So Solomon warns against the inability of money to ever satisfy him, the love of money to ever ultimately satisfy us. Then he mentions another truth here, and that is that expenditure rises to meet income. I've known young couples that just started out and they struggle to make their house payment and make their car payment and have enough. and come back in 20 years and you'll find that same couple and they're still struggling just as much. Now they've got a bigger house and they've got a car and a boat and all these other things, but they're struggling just as much. Nothing's changed. Their income has gone up and they have just indebted themselves that much more in the process. Look what he says in verse 11 and 12. As goods increase, so do those who consume them. And what benefit are they to the owner except to feast his eyes on them? And then he contrasts that with another man. He says, the sleep of a laborer is sweet, whether he eats little or much, but the abundance of a rich man permits him no sleep. You know, at some point, money ceases to matter. You can get such a pile of it that it's not going to matter whether you have 2 million or 3 billion or $5 billion. The amount becomes inconsequential. I mean, how much steak and lobster can one man eat? How many channels can you really enjoy if you just multiply them with all the cable that's out there? How many pairs of shoes can one woman wear? Really, you know, I mean, at some point it becomes academic. I mean, you can fill your house with furniture. You can fill your garages with cars. You can fill your closets and all of this. And eventually, you'll have a house full of junk that you can only look at. You can't utilize that much stuff in a lifetime. And then he contrasts that with the working man. And he talks about this man whose sleep is sweet, whether he eats little or much. Chuck Swindoll, in his book, describes this working man. And I think he's describing a lot of folks across this land and around the world. He says, the working man who punches in at 7 in the morning, punches out at 3 in the afternoon, he drives his pickup home, and he and his son drive over to the ball field. And he shags flies with the boy. In fact, he helps coach the little league team in the neighborhood. He is just a hard-working, easygoing, fun-loving working man. They drive home, he and the boy, to his wife, and they all sit down together around the table and eat a bowl of chili with Fritos. They watch a little television and hit the sack, and within 60 seconds, you can hear him snoring. You know, what a contrast for a man who owns all these things that he has to worry about and fret about and take care of, and then this man who lives the simple life. Solomon is saying here, you know, there are real advantages to simplicity in living and not acquiring all this wealth. What a blessing so many enjoy every day that they don't even realize is a blessing. The sleep of the laborer is sweet. Now, Solomon pauses here in verse 13, and he makes this statement, I have seen a grievous evil under the sun. And then he moves on and talks about some of the real terrible things that go with wealth. He says, I've seen this grievous evil. And I think this is really the other half of what the Queen of Sheba had not seen. She said the half has not been told. She saw all the good, but there's a dark side of wealth that Solomon goes on to mention. And that's the fourth truth here, and that is that money is only temporary. Look what he says in verse 13. I have seen a grievous evil under the sun, wealth hoarded to the harm of its owner, or wealth lost through some misfortune, so that when he has a son, there's nothing left for him. Naked a man comes from his mother's womb, and as he comes, so he departs. He takes nothing from his labor that he can carry in his hand. I've been at untold funeral services. And the tradition here in Missouri is that after the funeral service concludes, very often the casket will be open and people will file by and pay their last respects before they go. And then the family is there and they're the last ones to stand there at the open casket. And then when they have said their final goodbyes, the family is ushered out and the funeral director will close the casket and then the casket will be rolled out to be placed in the back of the hearse. But something always happens after the family leaves and before that casket is rolled out to the hearse. Most of the time, the person who's deceased will be wearing their jewelry that they customarily wore in life. And the funeral director goes over, and the last thing he does, he has a little velvet pouch, and he takes the ring off the fingers. Sometimes he'll remove a necklace from around the neck of the individual. Sometimes they'll even take the eyeglasses off of the person. And I can promise you that the pockets in that suit are absolutely empty. Nothing of any material worth, even the jewelry removed. I've never seen a lady buried with her purse. You know, that never happens. Solomon simply says, what you came into this world, you'll leave with. Absolutely nothing. Whatever you've acquired in this life, however much you own by way of possessions, whatever your bank account is, you won't take it with you. You will leave this life absolutely empty-handed. In Proverbs 23, Solomon spoke there also about money, and he said in verses 4 and 5 of Proverbs 23, "Do not wear yourself out to get rich. Have the wisdom to show restraint. Cast but a glance at riches, and they're gone. For they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle." Boy, what an apt figure of speech. I don't know if you've ever noticed it or not. I have a dollar here in my pocket. He says that they will sprout wings and fly off like an eagle. I don't know who designed our $1 bill, and I know that the eagle is the symbol of our nation, but you couldn't pick a more biblical symbol. Right there on the back of the $1 bill, it's the eagle with his wings spread. So the next time you get your money out and start to spend it, you look at the picture of that eagle and you remember the truth of what Solomon says, that your money will fly away like an eagle that spread its wings. It's there as a reminder for all of us to know how transitory money really is. And then he mentions the last truth in this section as one who knows from the inside what it's like to be an extremely wealthy person. He says that money often makes its possessors absolutely miserable. That which we would think would make us happy and fulfilled, he says, no, it tends to work the very opposite. Look what he says in verse 16 and 17. He says, "This too is a grievous evil. As a man comes, so he departs. And what does he gain since he toils for the wind? All his days he eats in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger." We don't think rich people have to deal with those kind of things. That's what poor people have to deal with. No, Solomon says it's not that way. He says the rich deal with great frustration and affliction and anger. All that work, and you can't even enjoy peace of mind. There's a description here of a man that we've all heard of. It says he was the world's ultimate mystery. So secretive, so reclusive, so enigmatic that for more than 15 years no one could say for certain if he was alive or dead, much less how he looked or behaved. Howard Hughes, one of the richest men in the world, with the destinies of thousands of people, perhaps even of governments, at his disposal, yet he lived a sunless, joyless, half-lunatic life. In his latter years, he fled from one resort hotel to another, Las Vegas, Nicaragua, Acapulco. His physical appearance became odder and odder. His straggly beard hung down to his waist, and his hair reached to the middle of his back. His fingernails were 2 inches long. His toenails hadn't been trimmed for so long, they looked like corkscrews. Hughes was married for 13 years to Jean Peters, one of the most beautiful women in the world, but never in that time were the two ever seen in public together. There's no record of their ever having been photographed even together. They lived in separate apartments. They finally were divorced in 1970. Hughes became more and more eccentric, germophobic. He died alone, miserable, one of the wealthiest men in this world. That's exactly what Solomon speaks about when he talks about those whose in all of his days, eats in darkness with great frustration, affliction, and anger. You know, most of us will never have to worry about the temptations that go with extreme wealth, but Solomon's warning is not just for those who have massive amounts of money. He talks about those who love money, and that paints with a much wider brush. in that classic movie that we see on every channel at Christmas time, It's a Wonderful Life, that story is wonderful about George Bailey. And you'll remember the closing scene when they all come in and they're all counting out the money and everything's been made right, and his brother comes home again, and as they're there, they give honor to old George Bailey, the richest man in town. Now, I'm grateful that there are a lot of George Baileys out here. And in this crowd, there are lots of you that are just like that. I'm one of them. I'll never be rich like Solomon, but I'm one of those richest men in town. I have friends. I have a roof over my head. I have my financial needs met. And I have family. Wonderful, wonderful family. I'm the richest man in the world. And I know many of you can say the very same thing. Solomon closes out this section with these words, verse 18. Then I realized that it is good and proper for a man to eat and drink and to find satisfaction in his toilsome labor under the sun during the few days of life God has given him, for this is his lot. Moreover, when God gives any man wealth and possessions and enables him to enjoy them and to accept his lot and be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. He seldom reflects on the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with gladness of heart. He doesn't have to worry about how long his life's going to be. He views it as a gift of God and he stays busy doing things that really matter. You know, God gives us this insight so that we'll not take wrong roads and pursue things over a lifetime only to regret them in our moment of death. I'm grateful that we can learn from Solomon's experience so that we can spend our life involved in things that really matter, things that really count, so that when we are on our deathbed, we can look back not with regret, but with joy and with satisfaction on a life that has been well lived in the service of God. Tonight we're going to sing a song. If you need prayer, if we can assist you in any way, we'll be glad to do that. We'll be glad to help you if you're ready to give your life to God. If you need to come, we want to encourage you to do that while we stand and while we sing.